Welcome to this week's edition of the Property Buyer and Sellers Podcast. I'm your host, Ken Hume, and I'm here to take you through the very latest news and views, hints, tips, and tricks to help you on your property journey. Hello, and welcome to the Buyer and Sellers Podcast. It's September the 15th, Friday, 2023, and we're broadcasting this episode to you all about whether you should move or improve. And this is a real dilemma for a lot of buyers and sellers. They get to a situation where the children grow a bit, especially now in September, when the children have grown up a bit over the summer. You know, the bikes are a bit bigger, the children are a bit bigger. You know, everything requires more space. And therefore, people start to think about what can we do to alleviate the pressure on the household. And there are a couple of things that you can do. Number one, of course, is you could extend. Where do you extend? Well, usually these days in a terraced house, it's into the loft. And the loft will normally provide, on the average terraced house, two bedrooms and a bathroom at maximum, often one rather large bedroom and an ensuite bathroom. And there is a problem. And the problem is that the cost of these extensions now, because of the cost of raw materials has gone up so greatly and the cost of labour has gone up so incredibly, that these extensions are now quite costly. Here in London, as I speak, we're just looking at an estimate for one, which is a basic shell with no bathroom fittings, what they call first fix, which means a rudimentary shell ready for second fix, i.e. finishing off. And that was coming out at £60,000 plus VAT. Now, if you add that £60,000 onto the value of this particular terraced house in the middle of Southwest London, you get to a number which is not the same as the number you would get for sale. What I'm trying to say here, let me put that in a much more succinct way. The £70,000 to £80,000 you would end up spending will not be regained if you were to sell in the same year. Now, that's not a problem for most people, because most people don't do an extension to sell in the same year. But it is a really, really tricky shout as to whether you should extend or whether you should indeed move. Particularly in London here, what we find is that there is a very marginal difference between staying in a small terraced house and moving up to a semi-detached house in a better road with a garage to the side, which wouldn't provide you with another bedroom, but would provide you with the opportunity to extend perhaps above the garage with another two bedrooms and space still in the loft if you required it, plus a bigger garden and the ability to extend into that garden without it encroaching too heavily on the house. What can happen with a terrace house? If you push out too far, then you're left in a situation where you don't have much garden left. So you find yourself where you've got a big family house now. Fantastic. On the other hand, who wants a big family house with a very small garden? Not many people. So you do have to consider what garden you have left when you're extending. And similarly, with a loft, you go up, but if you don't go out, then you find yourself in a situation where you've got four bedrooms and quite a lot of space on the top floor. Lovely big room up there. And then the other bedrooms feel relatively small and the ground floor feels positively tiny unless you extend out the back as well. And by the time you put the value of those two extensions together, you're quite often spending more than £200,000 here in London. And that £200,000 would buy you the difference between a three-bedroom terraced house and a four-bedroom semi-detached house in an inverted commas better location. So it's a real dilemma for many. And of course, for many, it's about affordability. They could just about squeeze by helping out and getting friends to muck in the extension cost, but perhaps they couldn't get to the cost of moving house with things like stamp duty, also a consideration. So should you move or should you improve? You've got to ask yourself the one question, and I think start from doing your homework. The number one thing I would advise you to do is look at houses on your road that have had the extensions and what prices they might have achieved. Look at houses that have not had the extension and what price they've achieved. And then we have our benchmarks. You will know, if you're being pragmatic and honest and doing a helicopter sort of panning out and looking down at your house against the others that might be available and competing, how your house compares. Once you know that number, then you can say to yourself, okay, if I make this extension, then let's say, for instance, my house is worth £475,000 at the moment. It will be worth £550,000, but it will cost me maybe £100,000 to get there, i.e. £600,000, i.e. I'm losing £25,000. Well, that's true, and it's not true. It's not true because if you're not moving, then it's not relevant. But by the same token, when you come to sell, if it's in a short time frame, then you may consider whether the juice is worth the squeeze, if you will. In other words, was it worth all the effort? Because the other consideration is this. When you're extending into the loft of a terraced house, there is massive upheaval and a lot of work to do. And you may find that it's a lot of stress for you and your family. Quite often, mid-job now, builders are increasing their rates. And at the point where the roof is off, the client's feeling very vulnerable. And, you know, you can find yourself in a situation where you're being asked for a considerable amount of money that you don't have. That can be really, really stressful and is quite common. And also material costs go up all the time. So even if you're talking about the same job, you can find yourself in a situation where the materials that the builder quoted for are now a much higher figure. So they're asking you to put up the difference. And if you don't, frankly, they'll just walk. And this is quite common. We see a lot of houses where they're halfway through an extension and a builder's walked, and then they've had to get a new builder in. Builders don't like working on what other builders have started. Sometimes they consider that what they've done is substandard and therefore they want to rip it all down and start again. So it can be really, really stressful. So can moving, of course, to be fair, and that has to be considered too. But bear in mind, if you move and if you are in a position where you're adding to your budget as much as £100,000 or more, you are going to get into an inverted commas better road. Now, depending on where you live, that could mean that you've got a garage in the new home where you haven't in the old. And more often than not, where you have a garage to the side, what you have is a wider plot. You also have parking to the front quite often as well. And that may be a sea change for you if you have no parking right now, or indeed, even if you have parking, to have the convenience of a garage, the storage space that affords, plus the wider garden. And of course, that's plot space you can extend into. You could take that garage and turn it into an internal room. You could build over it. And quite often we find with the average semi-detached house, if you build over it, you will get an extra two bedrooms and a bathroom in that space, often two double bedrooms and a small shower room in the middle, or one really luxurious bathroom, bedroom, ensuite type arrangement. And then, of course, you haven't touched the loft yet. So you could get five bedrooms on the semi on the first floor above the garage. And then, of course, you could get another one or two on the top floor. So you could literally go from three bedrooms to seven, which the average terraced house won't afford. It just hasn't got the space to be able to do that. So that could be a real consideration too. So whether to improve or move is a real dilemma. And it's not just about money. For me, it's about the amount of time it's going to take you. And quite often that will extend. So if a builder estimates it's going to be 3 to 6 months, read 9 to 12 months as a minimum quite often. Some builders are better than that and they will keep to their time frame. But more often than not, these things tend to go on longer than the original estimate, mainly because small builders particularly are working on several sites. And they're working on your house for a day and then they have to pull off to go and carry on with another job and so on and so forth. Again, adding to the stress and the upheaval, especially when you've got a temporary roof on, or perhaps you've got scaffolding over the top of your roof and your house is more exposed and colder. And that's without the dampness and the wet and the cold that's all coming in while you're trying to live your life. And for most of us, it does mean living around what's happening because A, often you'll want to supervise the build, and B, you don't have anywhere to go anywhere anyway. And so, you know, this could be a substantial stress. And of course, if you move to a new house rather than improve your own, you don't have this. And if you do have a semi-detached or detached house, then often you can live in one side of the house whilst the other side is being developed. And it's not quite so stressful as it is in a terraced house doing the build. And that's without access considerations, such as builders traipsing through your house night and day in order to get the work done. It can be awful and it can take years off of your life. So before you extend, consider carefully whether it's right for you and your family. Line up the benefits. You know, if we extend, then we won't have to move. That's no stress of moving, no stamp duty. There's a big cost there. But also, it will take 6 months to a year to do. We'll have upheaval and stress during that time. The price will probably change during that time. And of course, that's without the consideration that a lot of the things that you consider, okay, we'll just have the basic bathroom or the basic kitchen, whatever it is. You don't really want that, do you? None of us do. We want the better kitchen or the better bathroom. So your budget ends up getting extended by the things that you desire, you know, that prettier kitchen, that more beautiful glass wash hand basin, or whatever it is, can be a substantial cost add. and maybe a value add too, but in the short term, just a cost to add to the equation. So it does take a lot of consideration as to whether you should extend, especially if you're going to live in the property for a period of between 3 and 5 years. Bearing in mind, it can take up to a year to do. Then assuming it's gone well, then you live in this lovely place. But if you're moving in 4 or 5 years from now, you may find that you get back less than you put in. When you look at what the average house that's unextended is achieving and one that's extended, you often find that the unextended one seems to get a disproportionately high figure to the one that's been improved. Why is that? Well, a couple of reasons. Number one, the P word, potential. If you extend a terraced house out to the rear and then you extend into the loft, that's fantastic because you've maximized its potential. But guess what? Most buyers want potential. They're excited by the thought of doing a rear extension or a loft extension, mainly because they've never done one and it looks like fun. They'll soon find out it's not on average in my experience, but nonetheless, you've taken away the P word. So that lack of potential takes away some of the excitement for some buyers, not for all, of course. Some will require the added accommodation and the impressive extensions that you've added. But the other consideration, and this is a big one, is people are searching for value now where London house prices are so high. So they'll try and get into the cheapest house they can and then worry about the extensions later. So even if your house is only 100,000 more and you've spent 150,000 on it, that extra 150,000 or 100,000 more may be outside of many people's budget anyway. So let's say you were worth 450 unextended and you're now worth 550 extended, then that 550 may not be attainable for the average buyers in your street. So therefore, you become, if you're not really careful, a bit of a white elephant. You know, that house that theoretically should be worth 700,000, but no one pays that on the road because they want to live on a posher road, one where you have perhaps a tree-lined grass verge, perhaps you have the garage to the side, the bigger garden, the semi-detached houses, closer to the station, closer to the favourite school of the area, perhaps it's got a much bigger garden, and so on and so forth. So I would say be cautious before you carry out any extension works. And my advice would be take advice from a local estate agent that has been selling in the area for many years, that whose opinion you can trust when it comes to, you know, if they don't just want to sell your house and they're not, I know that you may think that there's just a vested interest there, but for small independent estate agents to have a good reputation like ourselves, we really just want to maintain a long-term relationship with our local community. And that means that if we think that the best advice for the client is that they stay put and financially that's going to be the best thing for them, then we'll say that. And we'll say, look, you know, come to us in 10 years or whatever it is when you decide to sell. But in the meantime, you know, go ahead and do your extension. We believe that's the right thing for you. In other cases, we'll look at it and say, well, it's a no-brainer. You know, you put that extension on, it's 100,000 more, but you can live in this road for 100,000 more. Why would you want to be where you are when you could be here for that money? And it's always best, of course, long-term, to get the worst house in the best road. And everybody knows that. And that's what pushes up the price of the smaller houses that are unextended. Better to get the cheaper house on a good road than to get the well-done house on an average road, because that average road is going to have a lower maximum value than the really good road. And also, when you've got semis, you will find that in those houses and the detached houses, that the average values are much higher. And because the average values are much higher, when you improve, you can be more certain of getting something close to your money back when you do those extensions. So when it comes to whether you should do it or not, only you and your family can decide whether it will bring the added quality of life and enjoyment to you and the family for a significant and sufficient period of time that makes the end justify all of the hassle and stress you have to go through. Failing that, it may be worth considering a move. And the way to consider that move is look at the current value of your house and then look at what you could add on for that extension and then see what that difference will buy you, what street you could live in, and say to yourself, would I rather live in that street or would I rather have my extension? And, you know, when you've done that, quite often we find that people will come back and say, actually, now we've balanced it out, it's better off selling the house as is and then perhaps thinking about extending the new house, which has a higher residual value in the future when it comes to the fact that the average value in the street is so much higher anyway. And that's what you've got to look at, is averages. If the average value in the street is low, It's low for a reason. Not necessarily that the neighborhood is awful or the house is horrible, just that there are limitations, such as the square footage of the house, the limitations of the gardens, the fact that you can't get garages, perhaps parking's difficult, and so on and so forth. So the answer to should I extend or should I move is a very individual one, and it's worth taking under careful consideration. But things to bear in mind are, number one, the stress factor. It will be larger than you think. Number two, the cost. It will go up more than you've been quoted. Number three, what could you buy with that extra money elsewhere? Bearing in mind, whatever you've been quoted, you'll probably end up spending 20 to 30% more than that. So if you've got a quote for 100, I would say, look at what you can buy for 150, because you'll probably end up spending 150 on your extension by the time the job ends and the materials and the particularly nice bathroom and kitchen that you want to fit it. So there's always going to be, in my experience, nearly always, it's over budget by considerable margins. Not always, but most of the time. So really difficult decision. If you're in that dilemma, call your local estate agent, get them around for an opinion, and then say to yourself, will me and my family be here for the next 10 years? And therefore it comes out in the wash, because 10 years from now, prices will be so different. It really won't matter whether it's 50,000 higher or lower, because the whole value of the whole thing will be so much higher anyway. And it's, you know, you're going to find it comes out in the wash. Whereas if you're going to move in 3 to 5 years, I would be much more cautious about extending in those circumstances. Hope that's helpful to you. Now onto a little bit of news from the general property market. We always like to bring you the latest news and stories from the press for the week. And this week, an article in the Financial Times and the Evening Standard, the Financial Conduct Authority has uncovered poor advice and misleading promotions in later life mortgage reviews. And what they're saying is that they've been forcing lenders to offer lifetime mortgages to withdraw or change over 400 misleading promotions. They found that the sales of these mortgages often did not meet expected standards, and there were a number of bad practices, including they're promoting the benefits of their products without mentioning the risks. It's saying that it's requiring the firms which fell short to improve the quality of their advice. And the review said that they're all making improvements to their practices. Almost 400 promotions have been removed or amended. Now, this is most commonly what we're talking about here is mortgages for end of life, and where people are getting these lifetime mortgages are a situation where if you need cash and you own your property outright, they provide a mortgage for you at a rate, and then you can choose to pay off that mortgage or you can choose to leave it. But the interest payments will then roll up, which means that when you do eventually pass, the debt will be much larger. And that's a real consideration if you have relatives. This is not financial advice, by the way. Seek advice from an independent financial advisor. But it is something that a lot of people do in later life. And we'll come on to one of the reasons for that during one of the other news articles. Struggling homeowners are getting a boost with sub 5% mortgage. This is some good news on mortgages again for a change. Struggling homeowners are receiving a boost with the announcement of a new 5-year fixed rate mortgage priced below 5%. Now, this is quite interesting. It's the first time a deal like this has been available since June. And it's the Mortgage Works, TMW. They're owned by the Nationwide Building Society, and they've unveiled a 4.99% fixed rate. And this is for buy-to-let borrowers. It carries a 3% fee, and it's open to borrowers with a loan-to-value ratio of 55% or lower. That's going to be a struggle for many people, I know. But if you do have a low loan-to-value, then this could work for you. It comes as lenders have been engaged in a price war, of course, with major lenders making rate reductions in recent days. The best 5-year fixed rate for a residential mortgage was 5.1 from Santander, while the best remortgaging 5-year fix was 5.22 from Cumberland. Gary Bush at Mortgage Shop said, lenders have shifted from shut-up-shop mode to full-blown price war mode, and this suggests a busy end to 2023 in the mortgage market. And it's good news. We like to see a bit of competition in the mortgage market because it has been a real struggle for people. And hopefully it will come down further as time goes on. But that does depend, as we've said many times, on inflation figures and what the Bank of England does with interest rates. There may be another rise to come. Let's hope not. But it's not about the rises so much as what the money markets think will happen medium and long term. Older tenants are facing a housing emergency amid rising rents. And this is why one of the reasons why people are struggling so much is that mortgages have gone up, and in the process, so have rent. And because that's happened, Half of older private tenants had a rent raised in the past year, and more than one in five can no longer comfortably afford what they owe. And this is according to a survey by Independent Age. The charity said the threat of eviction is a real fear for many people, given the lack of alternative provision for older people. Its hidden renters report found 45% of older private renters aged 65 and over had experienced a rent increase in the past year, with more than half of the rises being between £50 and £200 per month. Charity said it's calling for the government to take action to fix the broken private rental sector now, urging a raise in the local housing allowance to cover the cheapest 30% of the local private rental market and ensure that this is updated annually so renters aren't forced into poverty when rents go up. Well, I would agree with that. What this is one of the problems we find is that the government are holding the rates down. And of course, the problem that gives us is that the private market, the demand is huge because the government have put so many obstacles in the way of small landlords. Many have sold up. And this is causing a lack of supply. And obviously, it's a supply and demand market. When we have a lack of supply, what happens? Prices rise. And when prices rise, it's much harder for people without employment, i.e. pensioners and the unemployed, to find somewhere that's affordable. And of course, if you're getting supplemented by local authority and that local authority is refusing to keep pace with the market, then obviously private landlords and any business are likely to serve notice on you so that they can get a market rent from another tenant. And this is a real problem. And I've said for a while now that we're in the middle of the biggest housing crisis this country's ever seen. And I still stand by that. It will get worse over the next few years because the government are not doing enough. They're not building enough. And there's not enough being done by governments. And there's not enough plans in place, frankly, either Labour or Conservative, to make sure that we have adequate provision, especially at the lower and the council end of the market. Only a fifth of renters are saving enough for retirement. Well, this is hardly surprising what they're saying here, that rents have increased so much that renters are unable to save for retirement. And this could be a retirement bomb later on, says the Eye. It's an interesting article I found in the Telegraph. And this is about heat pumps. You know, we're all being told we've got to change these heat pumps. And Homes for Scotland have warned that the ministers that the ban on gas boilers in new build homes will lead to a halt in house building. And this is because there's an electricity shortage. The trade body explained that the builders are unable to obtain the necessary amount of electricity from National Grid to power the heat pumps. Now, this is a real problem. It said its electricity requirement increased from 8 MVA to 35 MVA due to the need for heat pumps and electric car charging points. So that's really interesting. So we now have a backlog because we can't provide enough power to provide for the solutions that the government is saying that we should now be looking at. So that's a real dilemma. It's crazy, isn't it? A lovely story in the Daily Telegraph about homes that were sold for £1 to keep flats for local people. And this is in Cornwall. Of course, Cornwall is such a beautiful holiday spot that many people have bought second homes there. And it's pricing local people out of the villages, which is very sad. And Cornwall Council has sold a Grade 2 listed block of 11 apartments in the fishing village of Lough to the Three Seas Community Land Trust to ensure that homes remain available to local workers. They set out plans for a 1 million reservation on the flats, and they're being sold for £1. That's lovely, isn't it? And they're going to local people. Love that. Fancy something a little bit different? Why not buy a gun tower? This is a story in the Mail and the Sun. A 168-year-old gun tower located at the mouth of the River Thames in Kent is up for sale for £150,000. I have had a look at it. Do Google it. Just Google 168-year-old gun tower, River Thames, Kent, and it will come up. And it's an awful looking building. I don't really know what you could do with it, but you need to be aware that the location means it's only accessible twice a day. The tower, the last of its kind, was built to protect the nearby military dockyards against the French invasion. Auctioneers expected to fetch $150,000. The auctioneer Jeremy Lamb from Savills said the tower represents a unique opportunity for developers and occupiers, with potential for alternative uses or development subject to the necessary consent. I'm not sure what consent you would get there, but nonetheless, quite interesting. So in terms of the podcast for this week, that's it. I hope you've enjoyed it. Next week, we're going to come back with some stories about what Labour and Conservatives are doing for alternatives in terms of house building and housing policy and how that might impact on the market generally. So thanks very much for listening, as always. Hope you've enjoyed the show. We'll be back next week with another edition. Please do email in any problems you have with property or any questions you have that we might be able to assist you with. Just email ken@jamesalexander.com and we're happy to answer the questions on the podcast weekly and hopefully help you in your home buying journey. Thanks for listening as always. Take care of yourselves and your family. Ciao.
Thank you so much for joining us on yet another edition of the Property Buyer and Sellers Podcast. You can find out more at our website, jamesalexander.com. You can email me directly, ken@jamesalexander.com. We are estate agents and we can give you hints, tips, tricks and advice wherever you're buying, selling, moving to or from. Thanks to Ben Sounds for the intro and outro today, and thanks to Jack Bowles for production.